Welcome to another podcast, another edition of Just a Walk in the Sun, delivered to you by the Hereford Light Infantry Museum. I'm Colonel Andy Taylor, the curator of the museum, and this is going to be a slightly different type of podcast. Those of you that are old enough to remember two-way family favourites may recall that the family in UK spoke to the serviceman while he was abroad. Well, we're not quite there in this edition, but Paul Robert is actually walking a long walk in France, and hopefully he's on the end of the phone and going to tell us a little bit about what he's up to. So, Paul, are you there?
I am, Andy. I can hear you loud and clear. Yes, I am indeed in France at the moment. I've been for about 10 or 12 days now. I've been walking the Via Francigena, the pilgrim route from Canterbury to Rome. I'm not going to get all the way to Rome at this attempt, but I am hoping to get over the St. Bernard Pass and peep
What's
into
the
Italy.
Distance of that then, Paul? How far is that?
I'll be looking to walk about 600 miles. And
wow.
So, yeah, it's about 1,200 miles all in all. And I'm averaging around 13 miles a day, something like that, a fairly steady number. So far it's going quite well. The usual aches and pains. I've had some sore feet to cope
I
with.
was going to ask you how your feet were holding out.
Not too bad. I think I managed to give myself some impressive blisters in training, which has made me particularly cautious. And I've been doing very good foot drills. You'll be pleased
Excellent.
to hear,
Well done,
Andy.
young man. Yeah. And what's the weather been like then for you?
It's been a bit mixed. It didn't start off too well, but now I've got down into France itself. We've got some quite nice sunny days. Not too hot, which is good. No, I don't like walking in the heat very much. So walking in April and May, it's a little bit fresher. So yes, it's looking up.
Oh, well, that's good news, and I'm sure you're having a good rest each evening and a glass or two of the local vino.
There's plenty. Yes, right. It's mostly been through beer territory so far, Andy. So the walking through the French Black Country as well as those old mining districts. They
Of
they
course,
produce
yeah.
some very fine beer. I had a rest day in Arras fairly recently, last couple of days. And so, enjoyed some beer there. The route itself has got quite a long pedigree. It was first recorded by Archbishop Sigeric in the 990s,
Wow.
and he was called to Rome to receive his pallium, his cloak of office. And he, on the way back, his scribe wrote where they stayed each night. And you can plot nearly all these routes. There's a bit of conjecture about one or two of the overnights, but they follow all the Roman roads. So it's a fairly logical path all the way to Rome. He won't have been the first to have walked the path, but he was the first to have recorded it. And today, because a lot of those Roman roads are now very fast,
Yeah, I can imagine.
national,
Yeah.
not the best place to walk along. The modern day Via Francigena follows a slightly more circuitous route, but nonetheless, roughly following in the footsteps of Archbishop Sigeric.
So the route so far must have followed, or you must have gone through quite a lot of towns and villages that you recognise the names of from the First World War.
Absolutely, absolutely. It's very much been it's been a very interesting experience so far. We started off at Calais and then walked inland to a place called Guisnes, and then from there we're sort of slightly behind the front line. If you think of the Battle of the Lys and that sort of area, we sort of skirted around Saint-Omer. I say we. So, After Gein, it was only me, but
Well,
I've been.
I think you can count it as we because you've got 2 feet, so that's a
Indeed,
plural.
indeed, and I have started talking to myself. So it's I think so I might stick with we. Anyway, we skirted round Saint-Omer but more recently then walked through the Arras battlefields, and I think it was particularly moving walking to Notre Dame de Lorette, the huge French cemetery and ossuary and national war memorial just outside Arras. And of course, these are places that many places that I've been before, but sort of jumped in a car, gone from one place to the next. And actually, this gives an opportunity, to walk through the landscape and to see the Vimy Ridge Memorial getting,
Oh yeah, getting bigger
bigger
and
and bigger as I
closer.
get closer to it, and I went down in the underground cave system in the Wellington Quarries in Arras as well on my rest day, which was absolutely fascinating. The use of tunneling and all sorts of underground storage and recuperation that the troops
I mean,
carried
it
out.
seems surprising that you're even managing 13 miles a day because you must be so tempted to stop at all these places and get lost in research and just wandering and wondering around.
It is, and some days I thought, well, I'll get to my goal for today about 3 o'clock, and so I'll have it. Actually, no, I haven't. It's been more like five because of the, as you say, the stopping on the way. The it's yeah, it's been a fascinating walk so far, at the moment, I'm I mean, on the Somme battlefield, Bapaume was last night's stay, and I'm heading on towards Peronne and Saint-Quentin. So that particularly thinking about the German spring offensive, really in March 1918, which will be the next place and
But
battlefield to explore.
where are you exactly now? And then I'll tell
Well.
you why you're there.
Yeah, well, you dropped me a pin, Andy, and on the map, and so I've come slightly off my route, back onto the Somme battlefield. I'm sort of, well, quite. Where am I? I mean, it's quite a bleak place, I must admit, as the Somme can be. I'm west of Bapaume, north of the Somme valley itself. I suppose the nearest place is Beaumont Hamel, and I've there's Serre to the north of me as well if I look in that direction. So yes, I'm in the middle of a collection of fields. There's lots of small cemeteries around here, and you asked me to visit a cemetery known as Ten Tree Alley Cemetery in Puiseaux.
That's right. Well, I'm glad you managed to find and get yourself to the right place. But the reason I asked you to go there is because one of my friends from Ledbury, and you will know her as well, Brenda Hill,
Oh, yes, Brenda.
her
Yeah.
grandfather was killed on the Somme and is buried in a Ten Tree Alley Cemetery. So I thought it appropriate for you to go there with that local link and to for it to lead in to for us to tell the story of what's known as the Herefordshire Regiment 250, men from the regiment who were transferred from the Herefordshire Regiment via the King's Shropshire Light Infantry to the Border Regiment, fought on the Somme, and really took part almost in the last battle or the last encounter of the Somme battle at the end of November, and many were killed or taken prisoner.
Oh, that's really interesting because, the first thing I looked around for was the telltale lion of the Herefordshire Regiment cap badge, and I found there none. But as soon as you mentioned Border Regiment, that made a lot more sense because, well, I don't know. I think there's probably, I don't know, about 50 or 60 graves here, and a good proportion of them are Border Regiments, as you say. So that does make
Yeah.
sense.
I mean, this was right at the end of the Battle of the Somme, and the casualties had been enormous, as we all know, from those on the first day of the Somme, but they continued after through for the next sort of 3 months. And there was a desperate need for reinforcements. So they were calling people forward from the UK. And Private Owens, who is the man we're talking about, was a married man from Ledbury. He had enlisted, or registered, I suppose would be a better way of saying it, under the Lord Derby scheme, which
Oh,
was
yes.
the precursor of conscription. And that would have been in late 1915 or early 1916. And then the men who registered were called up according to their age and marital status. And we haven't got an exact date for when he was enlisted, but we've got a photograph of him outside of the drill hall in Ledbury with a group of other national reservists, all men who had enlisted under the Derby or registered under the Derby scheme and being called up for service. And one of the others on that photograph is Private Tarbuth, also from Ledbury. And we know that they were called up on, I wrote the date down somewhere and I now can't find it. It was in March. They were called up in March 1916. They then did their basic training with the 3rd Battalion, the Herefordshire Regiment, and in September were transferred to the King's Shropshire Light Infantry.
Right, which were
That
the parent unit, weren't they, really, of
Oh,
the Outfit
absolutely.
Unit?
And it makes sense in as much as that at this stage, the Herefords were in the Middle East. They weren't involved in heavy engagements, so they didn't need the reinforcements. But the reinforcements were definitely needed on the Western Front. And these men these trained men, it's difficult to know exactly how many of them, but they formed a reinforcement draft with men from the King's Shropshire Light Infantry, and about 250 of them were sent to France. And they went to the infantry battle depot at Rouen, which was known as the Bullring. And they arrived there, or they went in early October. There are some dates on some documents, but there's not a full record of these things, as you will well know how
A
these things are
absolutely.
for. Anyway, when they were in the infantry base depot, they were all transferred to the border regiment, the 11th Border Regiment, the Lonsdales. And an interesting story about the Lonsdales in itself. I'm not certain if he was commanding officer at the time, but he had formed this battalion up in Cumbria. And he was known as the Yellow Colonel because everything was yellow. And I've got a feeling that he had something to do with the formation of the Automobile Association.
Oh, right,
Which is
and
why they were yellow.
hence the yellow.
Yeah, but he's also Lonsdale of the boxing Lonsdale belt fame. But anyway, I digress. So they went to the 11th Border Regiment. Quite why, no one knows, but we assume that the Border Regiment were desperate for reinforcement, whereas the King's Shropshire Light Infantry didn't need the reinforcements, and so they were reallocated. So this means within the space of, oh, 3 weeks, they've been Herefordshire Regiment, and we don't have a copy of their regimental numbers, unfortunately. King's Shropshire Light Infantry, we've got a record of their regimental numbers, and then the 11th Border Regiment, and they were renumbered again. So these poor chaps probably weren't even certain what regiment they were in,
No,
what
no.
cap badge they should be wearing, perhaps. So just another case of how easily it is to confuse things
Yes, yeah.
from the First World War.
And so, if you were looking at a Herefordshire War Memorial that it had units on, and you see one that says Border Regiments, that's, we're not talking about the Welsh borders there, are we? We're talking about the Scots borders.
That's absolutely true. And I have seen accounts of individuals from the 250 which were transferred to the Border Regiment. And in local newspapers, it's been referred to as the South Wales Border Regiment,
Oh,
because
because
that would have been the local regiment. So
they've
again,
made that
more
assumption.
confusion. And even more confusion is that the 11th Border Regiment, I've seen individuals who were transferred to the 11th Border Regiment and it's being referred to as the second border regiment, because of course 11 in Roman numerals looks like a 2.
Oh, I see.
There has been an awful lot of digging and research into this, and there are others which have done this as well. There's I can't remember the name now. There's a lady up in Shrewsbury that's approached it from the KSLI end.
Is
There's a
that
chap.
Suzanne Makin?
You know, I can't remember the name now, but I think it could well be, yeah.
Yeah, we can check on
No,
that
Annette
before.
Burgoyne.
Oh, Annette Burgoyne.
Yeah,
Annette
Annette
Burgoyne.
Burgoyne, yeah. And then there's also Richard Sneed, who approached it from the other end, from the border regiment going back. And of course, me from the Herefordshire Regiment, the three of us have sort of all compared our notes. And mostly they agreed, which is always good news. But actually, you're still on top of that hill at the moment. And I've actually been there, and it's a small cemetery, as you say. I think it's approached across an open field, if my memory serves me correctly.
It
A
is,
stone wall around it. And when I was there, it was actually on the 100th anniversary of the death of Private Owens.
Oh,
So
really?
18th of November, 2016, it would have been. And the wind and the rain were beating across there, very much as they would have been 100 years before, I fear.
No, well, the and so how did what was the story then on the in November 1916? How did
Ah, well, right. How long have we got for this podcast? But for anyone that really wants to know the detail, there's an excellent book which has been written by Pete Weston called, I think it's just called Redan Ridge. I can't remember now. But he gives far more detail than I'm going to be able to portray in the next sort of 5 or 6 hours. But basically, the 11th Border Regiment was sent forward to capture a trench on the top of Redan Ridge. And this was right at the end of the Somme campaign. They captured the trench and occupied it. But there was a German counterattack which outflanked them and cut them off. And I think there were about 100 or 120 men of the border regiment which were just cut off in this trench. The Germans called upon them to surrender. They did not. They held out. And they literally fought to the last round before they surrendered. The British tried to get a relieving party out to them. I think two battle patrols were sent out but didn't get to them. I think that the men tried to break out as well, but they decided that they had so many injured that they didn't want to leave behind, that they didn't want to break out. And they were there, I think, for 10 days, if I remember
10
correctly.
days. Wow,
And
blimey.
they went out into no man's land and took food and ammunition from bodies that were lying in no man's land, all pretty desperate stuff. And then when they were in the end, they had nothing left. In fact, interesting enough, they captured some German prisoners during this stage as well from one of the German fighting patrols which had come out to try and capture them. So an incredible story. And in the end, they surrendered. And I think there were only about half a dozen of them which were actually uninjured. I think there were 20 or 30, perhaps even more, that were wounded to various degrees, and they all became prisoners of war. And unfortunately, of the 250, I haven't got the figures to hand now, but I think certainly 70 or 80 were killed. So a pretty horrific engagement, but probably typical of many of those Derby Scheme men that joined up in 1516 and were committed to the Somme.
No, that's really interesting. The 8th Worcesters that I do some research on, they're very similar story with some of their Derby Scheme men who were sent out and were transferred to the 10th Lincolnshire Regiment, to the Grimsby Chums, and they were very heavily engaged in fighting around Arras in April 1917 around the chemical works there. It's strange because we think of the, I know you think the same way as I do. These are very much local men, they're territorials, they're ours, if you like. And it sort of feels that we're th this is the time that the war started to change in terms of men were going to where they were needed, and irrespective, didn't it wasn't even brigades or divisions or geographical areas. They would be sent as a draft to France, and then would be sent off as a block to whoever needed them. And I believe the 11th Border Regiment, they suffered heavily on the first day of the Somme. Is that right?
Yeah,
I
they
think they
did,
were.
which is probably why they needed this reinforcement draft. But you're absolutely right. I mean, I think that the Somme was in many ways the turning point for the First World War, where a different strategy had to be used. It couldn't just be throwing men into the front line. They had to look for other ways of breaking the deadlock and gaining a victory. And of course, we then go into machine guns, gas, tanks, aircraft, all of these sorts of things. And of course, the combined arms battle, which really took hold in late 1916, but took time to develop and really wasn't effective until late 17 or even 1918. And of course, was very effective in the end.
No, that's right, that's right. But as you say, a lot of those technologies weren't really able to be deployed until Passchendaele the following year at the very earliest, when you think of sort of tanks and the like. And then of course the conditions, the Flanders mud didn't really
Didn't
favour
help a
the
lot, no.
deployment of armour.
But there's one interesting story as well about coming on from the Lonsdale men, in that Private Charles Davis, who was taken prisoner of war at Redan Ridge, and he was re it was reported to his family that he'd been killed in action because witnesses saw him being covered in earth from a shell burst. But he hadn't been killed, was taken prisoner of war. And he then escaped from a prisoner of war camp in January 1917. And within 21 days, so the local newspaper says, he was back in Hereford. Now, I wonder if his family knew he was a POW, knew he had escaped, knew he was in England, knew he was in Hereford, or thinking he'd been killed in action. And suddenly, son knocks at the door and says, "Hello, mum, put the kettle on."
What a story, what a story. Because we think about escapees, don't we, in the Second World War. We're around the anniversary of the Great Escape, aren't we? That's just passed. But that often tended to be a bit of an officer's pursuit, because officers weren't put to work, and other ranks were. But to hear from an escape story from the First World War, that's quite unusual.
And as a result of that, he was awarded the Military Medal, which would actually be fantastic to, in fact, on one of our open days, some of his descendants came in, which is how we know about this, and brought some newspaper cuttings from the time. But what we've never seen, of course, and what they'd never seen, was his medals. And it would be fascinating to, presumably, his military medal is named to the Border Regiment, but he's really a Herefordshire man and a Herefordshire
Absolutely.
soldier. Wouldn't it be a fantastic medal to actually own, and the story behind it?
And I believe those POW medals, I may be wrong here, but a lot of them were gazetted in 1920. And of course, military medals were gazetted without a citation anyway. So actually, to have that information from the family, to go with a medal would be wonderful, wouldn't it?
I have a feeling, although I would have to look it up, that I've got a feeling this was gazetted when he got home from the
Well,
escape.
that would make sense, I suppose, because the fact that he was home proved that he'd escaped.
I
whereas
know that there were, goodness me, I think there were some DCMs and some MMs awarded as well for the Redan Ridge engagement. But they, of course, the citations and the stories weren't known about those
No.
until at the end of the war until those until the prisoners had been released. So they came much later. And of course, because there were so many casualties, there were probably some real deeds of bravery and heroism undertaken, which were never observed or recorded, which
No,
is
absolutely. And
sad.
very, very sobering for me, you know, standing among so many of those brave men who didn't make it here at Ten Trees. Quite,
Anyway, Paul, you recognize that I diverted you off your main course for today, hopefully by not far. I don't know how much further you've got to go today.
not too much further. I did manage to get a lift out here, so I'll put that on the museum expenses account, obviously, Andy,
So, sorry,
and I should
you're
be
breaking up.
and no, not too far. I'm looking at Peron this evening.
Oh, brilliant.
So
Well, it's mostly downhill, isn't
yeah, pretty much
it?
downhill all the way from here.
Okay, Paul. Well, have a good trip, and I hope the walking boots hold out.
Indeed, so far so good. It's been great to speak to you, Andy, and we'll catch up when I'm back on British soil.
Will do then. Cheers, then, Paul.
Bye
Bye.
again.